Today is Monday, July 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, more than 2,000 aftershocks have rattled nerves in Southern California after two large earthquakes.
Obviously, 34 hours in between earthquakes, we're concerned about future aftershocks and where they're going to be.
As tens of thousands take to the streets again in Hong Kong, peaceful protests turn violent. Also ahead, a legendary American musician tells fans he is having a kidney transplant. It's all on today's International Edition. Emergency workers in Ridgecrest, California, are assessing the damage after a second major earthquake struck the desert community northeast of Los Angeles Friday night. No deaths or major injuries so far have been reported from either quake, but as Mike O'Sullivan reports, Friday's magnitude 7.1 tremor caused additional damage and left residents shaken.
Friday's quake was felt across Southern California and into neighboring Nevada to the east.
Oh my God!
Again, food flew off the shelves of supermarkets and bottles off the shelves of this liquor store.
This earthquake was longer, but also concluded with a very, very strong jolt that felt like it was going to, like, knock the whole place down.
Seismologists say Friday's earthquake was 10 times more powerful than Thursday's, which measured magnitude 6.4.
The quake did last for some time. It was felt widely throughout, most of Southern California and even as far north here as Sacramento.
The larger size of the quake meant the tremors that came before it, including the 6.4, are now classified as pre-shocks. Aftershocks continue to shake the region. Emergency workers have dealt with fires and water and gas leaks.
Obviously, 34 hours in between earthquakes, we're concerned about future aftershocks and where they're going to be. But we have people in place out in Ridgecrest, and all of our fire stations are staffed right now.
At Dodger Stadium in Los Angeles, a baseball game continued through the shaking as fans weighed their options.
Whether to run out or stay in place and hope for the best, that's kind of what we did. We stayed put and it went over, we were cool.
In Ridgecrest, residents and business owners were cleaning up as emergency workers continued to assess the damage. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Well, 2 weeks ago, U.S. President Donald Trump told Democrats to fix the loopholes in the U.S. asylum laws or federal authorities would deport millions of undocumented immigrants through mass raids. And since then, immigrant communities around the country have organized to protest the threat. But some Americans feel those deportations should have happened a long time ago. VOA's Skylar Ogden has more.
Outside the U.S. Citizen and Immigration Services office in Fairfax, Virginia, immigrant rights protesters demand an end to ICE raids in their communities. They are shouting, "Undocumented, no fear." They are part of a larger chorus of activists, immigrants, and rights groups nationwide who were galvanized to action after President Trump's June 17th tweet threatening to remove millions of undocumented individuals unless Democrats in Congress fix the loopholes in the U.S. asylum laws. He gave them a two-week deadline.
Most immigrants who are apprehended at the southern border who don't have authorization to enter the country, they can be quickly deported. But if they instead apply for asylum, that application process takes a long time. Many of them are then permitted into the United States while they're applying for asylum. So in the president's mind, that's a loophole in our southern border security system because it allows people to enter the country.
It's not the first time President Trump has threatened mass deportations. Shortly after his inauguration in January 2017, Trump said he would deport 3 million undocumented immigrants with criminal records. That never happened.
It's very traumatizing. You know, it's something that we as immigrants feel in our bones and in our blood every time that we see the news. We know that this is targeted, like this policies and politics are targeting us, right? It's a white supremacist society and racist government.
Still, some Americans, such as William Green, president of Americans for Legal Immigration, think deportations should have happened a long time ago. He says the existing immigration laws require the president to deport undocumented immigrants and send them home en masse, but he's not doing it.
We are not being protected from invasion. I have every right to expect the existing law of the United States, which requires all illegal immigrants to be returned to their homelands, to be enforced. That's not happening. I have a right to expect the laws that prevent employers from hiring illegal immigrants to be enforced. That's not happening.
U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement declined to offer any details about the upcoming raids or operations or appear on camera, but in a written statement, ICE spokeswoman Carol Danko says no American citizen can get away with breaking the law or violating a court order, and neither should undocumented immigrants. Congress did pass a $4.6 billion humanitarian aid package before leaving for a recess. It did not take up any legislation addressing asylum laws. As the end of President Trump's two-week deadline nears, undocumented immigrants grapple with uncertainty.
Most of the people are used to have to hear those threats, you know, because they live that life. But of course, when this announcement comes, they are more alert, because we start receiving a couple of tips, like there's 10 vans in the gas station, so we went there and there was no vans. But, you know, sometimes they get a little more.
In the meantime, as America celebrates its independence this holiday weekend, migrant communities continue to exercise their free speech rights.
We want to let them know that we will stand for everyone behind us, our families, our neighbors, myself, because even though we don't have documents, we're not afraid.
For VOA News, I'm Skylar Ogden.
Ivanka Trump, daughter and advisor to the president, has been the subject of criticism and ridicule after her prominent involvement during President Trump's visit to Asia last week. Many now are questioning her competence to be in such a high profile or at such high profile events, accusing the administration of harming the country's interests through nepotism, as well as wondering whether the president is grooming her for an even bigger role in the future. White House correspondent Patsy Wittakuswara has more.
Hobnobbing with world leaders, going to the demilitarized zone between South and North Korea.
What a beautiful couple.
And upstaging the nation's top diplomat during the president's June trip to Asia.
Beauty and the Beast.
Ivanka Trump seems to be everywhere lately.
And it's been a productive morning, to say the least.
President Trump has been accused of running the country like a family business when he appointed Ivanka Trump and her husband Jared Kushner as advisors in 2017, testing the Anti-Nepotism Act. The law was passed in 1967, partly motivated by President John F. Kennedy's nomination of his brother Robert as Attorney General. In 2017, a Justice Department lawyer issued an opinion saying the president has special hiring authority for White House positions exempt from the anti-nepotism law.
Ivanka and Jared worked very hard and they sacrificed a lot to be doing this, but they want to do it.
Ivanka Trump's position is unpaid, but critics argue it's still problematic.
She's clearly taking the penalty for nepotism, but not concerned about it. Is she representing the best interests of the United States, or is she representing the best interests of the family business, the Trump Corporation, or herself?
Ivanka Trump has championed projects such as the Women's Global Development and Prosperity Initiative.
And the opportunity that's created when you empower women, how they uplift their families, how they uplift their communities, and how whole countries prosper.
Some welcome her clout over the president on these issues.
I get the sense that there is buy-in to this. And if it's going to be an Ivanka project, well, she's got a significant amount of influence, so I'm hopeful that she'll be able to drive it into something more sustainable.
Her increasing domestic portfolio, which includes efforts to create jobs and combat human trafficking, is creating speculation about what's next.
People are wondering whether this is a sign that maybe Ivanka is going to be a future political leader, that Trump is trying to groom her to be one. And you can certainly see that kind of path.
I don't believe she does have the stamina.
Trump accused former rival Hillary Clinton of building a political dynasty. Experts point out that Americans may be willing to accept families in government, but only if they are qualified.
I don't believe America is very tolerant of having dynasties when the only thing they have going for them is their last names.
And when we asked the president about his intention for his daughter,
are you grooming her for office?
I'm not grooming her for office.
Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News at the White House.
Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Africa launches a free trade pact. Migrants stuck in Libya are demanding evacuation as a conflict escalates. India sets a roadmap to become a $5 trillion economy by 2025. And one in four Americans say they have no plans to retire, according to a new poll. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. More than 1 million Syrian refugees call Lebanon home, but the Lebanese government says it's time for them to leave. Officials deployed the army to accompany bulldozers as they began demolishing homes and refugee camps. Arash Arabasadi has more.
In a refugee camp in the remote Lebanese town of Arsal, the government says it is time for Syrians to leave.
We settled here, me and my children. Now the army came and ordered the destruction of this settlement.
Dima Al-Khanj fled with her children to Lebanon from Syria during the civil war. She made a home in a temporary concrete hut that is now a pile of rubble.
I had been living around 5 years in this house. Every year we fixed up one thing after another so that we could live in what you'd call a home. There's nothing left. Nothing you'd call a house.
Aid agencies say that beginning Monday, the army demolished at least 20 refugee homes.
Now I live with my neighbor. I have four children. Together we are five. Three families with all of our stuff. We can't rent a place or leave or do anything at all.
Military officials first warned refugees at this camp about the demolition plan about 2 months ago. Some were granted grace periods, but those have now ended.
It's up to the Lebanese authorities. They hosted us and we're grateful. They don't want us to stay. There's the UN, the countries, and the regime. Work together and we'll go back. We're ready to go back. We don't intend on staying here forever.
With their concrete huts now reduced to rubble, which residents themselves must remove, some worry about trying to survive in tents made of wood and plastic sheets, all that the government allows.
Of course there is fear. People are scared. Their hearts will not rest until they settle inside a tent, until every family gets into a tent.
We're scared for the future. God knows what other decisions they will come up with next. We can't go back to our country right now.
Many of the more than 1 million Syrian refugees in Lebanon live in camps like this one. The government's push to dismantle semi-permanent structures in the eastern part of the country will make homeless at least 15,000 children alone. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Tens of thousands of people marched in the streets of Hong Kong Sunday to protest a law that would allow people to be extradited for trial to mainland China, where courts are controlled by the Communist Party. As the marchers dispersed late Sunday, hundreds of protesters clashed with police. Photos posted on social media showed police in riot gear confronting demonstrators. Joining us now from Seoul, South Korea, is VOA's Bill Gallo. Bill, you were just in Hong Kong at the protests when they were peaceful, and then overnight all that changed. What happened, and what's the latest?
Protests in Hong Kong recently have taken on a dynamic where you'll have these massive demonstrations early on in the day, and it'll, of course, be mostly peaceful. There will be a lot of anger and every now and then clashes with police and a lot of yelling, but for the most part, they are peaceful, and then towards the evening, they will get more intense, and maybe a younger group of more, I guess you could call it, in some sense, radical protesters will sort of become more aggressive and the police will escalate. That's sort of what happened last night. As things got later, police tried to disperse the protesters. They didn't want to go. There were also some instances where police seemed to act in an aggressive way towards journalists. This is sort of a repeat of the behavior we've seen, but there was no kind of violence that was similar to the LegCo break-in last week, although things did seem to get quite rowdy last night.
Why are people still continuing with these massive protests even after the government put this whole proposed law of allowing extradition to China on hold?
They see that as only the bare minimum here, right? It's interesting, as these protests continue, you see protesters actually increasing their demands. This is a very emotional issue, and it's important to remember that maybe the near cause, the proximate cause of these protests is the extradition law. But really, this is about so much more. This is about what they see as their city, their country, becoming more like China in ways that they find unacceptable. So while this was sort of the spark that really set things on fire, this is about way more than just the extradition bill.
We're also hearing about multiple suicides among protesters, I believe. Is that correct? And what is going on here?
Yeah. It's hard to really pinpoint them exactly to this political unrest, but there have been deaths of four people who have been reported to have left some sort of notes with political sentiments expressed. Now, this is a tricky thing, and it's really emotional, and the details, they really matter. And I want to stress that, you know, these are not people who seem to kill themselves for political reasons. However, there is a sense in Hong Kong on the streets that is the case. There are vigils set up around Hong Kong where just literally tens of thousands of people, young people, will come line up and pay homage to what they sort of see as their fallen heroes here. Now, the reality of the situation is this is a very emotional moment in Hong Kong, and these people, in some sense, are being seen as martyrs. Others are warning, no, we don't need to glorify these people because we don't need to give up our lives necessarily for this. However, you talk to young people on the streets, and they really are willing, it seems, to sacrifice a lot for this. So it's a real volatile moment. I think these deaths sort of signify that.
All right. That's VOA Seoul correspondent Bill Gallo. Well, the sea ice around Antarctica has plunged from a record high to a record low in just 3 years, according to a new report released this week by the U.S. space agency NASA. Faith Lapidus reports scientists are not sure why.
While sea ice in the Arctic Ocean at the top of the world was steadily melting, Antarctica's ring of floating ice was steadily growing until 2014.
In just 3 years, as of 2017, it reached its 40-year record low, and that was 10.7 million square kilometers. So altogether, in that period of 3 years, it lost a little over 2 million square kilometers of ice. And that's a little bit larger than the area of Mexico.
More than 3.5 decades of Antarctica's ice game vanished in just 3 years, melting more rapidly than what's happening in the Arctic. The scientific consensus is that the loss of Arctic sea ice is related to both air and seawater getting warmer. Researchers are still looking for an explanation for the dramatic decline in Antarctica.
After 2014, when this huge decrease happened, there are some attempts to try to relate it to something going on in the atmosphere or the oceans. And there have been some indications that maybe, like in the Weddell Sea, it could have been warm air coming in from the north, and in the Ross Sea, it might have been slightly different reasons.
Whatever the reason, the trend has far-reaching implications for the polar ecosystem and the Earth as a whole. Unlike the bright reflective surface of ice, dark ocean water absorbs sunlight, trapping heat and leading to a cycle of continuous warming. Scientists are still doing research in Antarctica, looking for explanations and solutions. Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
The United States has won the Women's World Cup for the fourth time, beating the Netherlands 2-0 in Sunday's final. AP correspondent Ben Thomas has the story.
Fans at watch parties across the U.S., like those heard here in Kansas City, courtesy KCTV, erupted with cheers when Megan Rapinoe coolly drilled home a penalty kick, giving the U.S. the lead in the 61st minute. Then more cheers just 8 minutes later as emerging midfield star Rose Lavelle powered to the edge of the penalty area and hit a low strike past the Netherlands keeper to cement the 2-0 victory. Rapinoe scored 6 goals in the tournament, earning her the golden boot and powering the U.S. to its record 4th Women's World Cup title. I'm Ben Thomas.
Edition on VOA.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. Science and the determination of the human spirit propelled Apollo 11 to the moon 50 years ago. But it was popular culture that imagined man there long before July 16, 1969, say filmmakers and popular cultural experts. VOA's Penelope Pulu revisits landmark film and TV series that allowed people to dream and helped make Apollo 11 a reality, and others, recent ones, that have paid tribute to the historic event.
Moon exploration was the theme of the 40-minute feature film, A Trip to the Moon, by Georges Méliès in 1902. The film was, among others, influenced by Jules Verne's sci-fi novels. In 1950, George Pell's sci-fi Destination Moon offered a prophetic plot where the astronauts, upon landing on the lunar surface, are running out of fuel.
Kick her up, Jim. Give her some lateral.
Too late. Gotta land her in the few seconds of firing and won't have enough to get home.
Apollo 11's real-life close call of running out of fuel and having only one try to light the ascent engine off the lunar surface is revisited in Robert Stone's three-part documentary, Chasing the Moon.
If the ascent engine on the moon didn't light up, they were marooned. So that was the headline we had, ready to go.
This engine burned 7 minutes and 18 seconds, Frank, to get them into that 9.9-mile orbit, and it has to work.
5, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4 stage, engine arm ascent, proceed.
A year before the Apollo 11 mission, popular culture was once again forward-thinking, shooting beyond the moon.
If you think of something like Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey, that's in many ways, it comes out in 1968, and it's projecting ahead of the moon landings to an era when regular trips to the moon are going to be a part of everyday life.
And while the space race was in a dead heat between the United States and the Soviet Union, after Soviet cosmonaut Yuri Gagarin became the first man in space in 1961, Gene Roddenberry's series, Star Trek, was already imagining a united federation of planets working together on peaceful space exploration.
And envisioning also a future of what it would look like to have men and women of different races, different nationalities, even an alien, all on board cooperating.
Decades after Apollo 11, technological advances in filmmaking have allowed studios to remaster original NASA and other historic footage into IMAX, HD, and 3D technologies, which have allowed filmmakers such as Robert Stone to offer a visually compelling and historically comprehensive overview of the space race.
We just went through many, many thousands of hours of material in order to arrive at what you see in the final film. But by doing that, we were able to discover things that have been completely forgotten.
The six-minute mark in our countdown for Apollo 11. Now 5 minutes, 52 seconds, and counting.
Working closely with NASA and the National Archives, filmmaker Todd Douglas Miller of the IMAX documentary Apollo 11 offers a time capsule of the week around moon landing from the launch to the astronauts' return. The team processed never-seen-before 70-millimeter historic footage and 11,000 hours of audio recordings on the mission of Apollo 11.
I believe that this nation should commit itself.
Damien Chazelle's feature film on Apollo 11, First Man, is told from the perspective of Neil Armstrong and his family by blending seamlessly the film's cinematography with archival footage. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Music legend Stevie Wonder surprised concert-goers in London Saturday night by announcing that he will be taking a break from performing so he can receive a kidney transplant this fall. The 69-year-old musician made the announcement after performing Superstition at the end of a packed British summertime concert in London's Hyde Park. Wonder told the audience a donor has been found and that he was speaking only to quell rumors and reassure fans that he will be okay.
That a star would guide you my way to share with me this.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. We thank you for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Calvin Fowler. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
And please, may I once again, so that you too will understand, there's a ribbon in the sky.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa.
VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minutes newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
This is VOA News.